everyone. Welcome to another episode of Supernatural George. I'm Mittens, and today we are going to be talking about Season 6, Episode 16, And Then There Were None, written by Brett Matthews, his third and final episode of Supernatural after Live Free or Twie Hard and Caged Heat earlier this season, and directed by Mike Roll. Welcome to Eve, the mother of all that the dragons dragged out of purgatory. We get to learn about her mostly through her monster creations, which are a bit chaotic, if not genuinely terrifying. And I mean, a grubby little worm that crawls in your ear and controls you definitely has terror potential. But despite that, and the fact that I am a massive fan of Agatha Christie, this episode largely just ends up feeling sad and pointless in the bigger picture of Season 6, which is unfortunate. Mostly I'm mad that Rufus dies for this, and Gwen. It's just a lot of pointless death. And I'm mad that Bobby is used to be the one to off Rufus, even if indirectly since he was possessed by a monster at the time. But the one good thing to come out of this one is at the end, where Dean expresses his feelings on holding grudges. Basically, he thinks it's a stupid thing to do, and good for him, honestly. There's a lot of Winchester family drama to dig through here, too, so let's start digging. This one is pretty straightforward overall, so I'm gonna plow right in, and hopefully make up for last week's extra long episode a bit. I mean, not everything can be the French mistake, right? Probably for the best. There's not even any real bonus content to go with this one, aside from the standards, so we'll move directly into the then segment. We open with a reminder of Rufus Turner. We then get a reminder of Samuel Campbell and what he's been doing, the shady shit he's been doing with monsters all season long, torturing information out of them, that Samuel sold out his family, Sam and Dean, and Dean's promise to Samuel that the next time he sees Dean, Dean will be there to kill him. And the briefest reminder that Gwen Campbell exists. Not Glenn Campbell. If I accidentally call her Glenn Campbell, feel free to slap me. And then a flashback to a couple of episodes where the monsters had brought Eve over from purgatory. We don't know that she's called Eve yet, just the mother of all. We're left thinking, oh yeah, she's definitely going to be this season's big bad. And maybe not so much. Anyway, let's come to now. I can kvetch later. We open on a truck driver finishing filling his tank of gas, and Eve walks up to him, barefoot in a white dress, and he looks at her concerned and offers her a ride. Let's all spend just a moment noticing the white dress that looks very white nightgowny, that looks like flashbacks to Mary burning on the ceiling, Jess burning on the ceiling. White nightgowns are not good for women in this show. And the reminder that in a few more episodes, Eve will take on Mary's visage, the mother of all, this mythical being. And Mary is also at the center of the conflict that Samuel had been having. That's the whole basis of his deal with Crowley, was to get Mary back. So Mary is very present here, even if she's completely absent. We're being pushed to think about family. He asks her where she's going, and she's like, as far as you want, and tries to kiss him. When he pushes her away and tells her this is not right for you, and begins proselytizing to her, offering her a pamphlet about Jesus, they have a little philosophical discussion. Jesus was just a man, she says. God doesn't care about you, and Guy insists that, oh no, God does care about us. He sent his son to show us the way, you know. Eve taunts the guy for not even noticing that his God's apocalypse came and went, and she tells him that a mother would never abandon her children like that. She offers to tell him a secret, leans in towards his ear, and then just suctions onto his ear as the poor man freaks out. And then we cut to a shot later on of that truck driver returning home late that night to his wife asleep in bed. She wakes up and smiles at him, like glad that he's home safe. And then he beats her to death with a hammer. And then we cut to the title card. After the title card, we move back to Bobby's house, where Sam and Dean are looking at a map with Bobby as he's pointing out all the terrible incidents he's heard about from other hunters over the last week. In a progression moving across one particular highway, vampires, werewolves, shifters, ghouls, wraiths, all moving east down I-80. But where are they all headed? Bobby circles another town where the most recent thing was that poor truck driver who bashed in his family's heads. How is this related to all of those other specific monster kills? Sam, Dean, and Bobby go to interview him. He doesn't remember anything about the attack. He woke up in his truck and couldn't figure out how he got there. His first instinct was to call home, but nobody answered. And when he got there, he found his entire family dead. The only unusual thing that had happened that night was that he was giving someone a ride, and he hopes that they took off before he went murderous. Our guys find the security footage from the gas station where he picked the girl up, and they realize quickly, based on the glitching of the camera, that this could very well be the mother of all that they've been searching for. And that's what all the monsters have been headed toward. So if she is the cause of their current concerns, they have no idea what she even is, let alone if there's even a way to fight back against her. While they're all debating this, the police station clears out because they just got an emergency call that some dude went postal down at the cannery, which is the place where the truck driver had worked and found himself after his fugue state. And now somebody else there is also gone batshit. Bobby tags along with the police while Sam and Dean stay behind to research what they can about the mother of all. As Bobby's trying to get his questions answered about what happened there, Rufus comes out. He's already been posing as an FBI agent investigating. And they end up having to work together. It's clear that there is some sort of lingering tension between them, despite the fact that the last time we saw Rufus, they were both also grudgingly working together, but they did seem like gruff friends. But it's clear here that there were even deeper issues between them that just never got resolved. As Bobby and Rufus look at the body of the man who had opened fire on all of his workmates before the police shot him dead, neither of them can figure out how this one guy going berserk relates to the mother of all. This is apparently just a guy. Bobby spots some black goo in the guy's ear. They swab it out. The only conclusion they can come to about it is that they have no idea what it is. And both guys who snapped and killed their loved ones and friends worked at that cannery. So that's the place to start their investigation. They meet back up with Sam and Dean, intending to hunt down whatever caused these two men to go nuts. While the four of them are exploring the warehouse, they run across Gwen, who is very surprised to see them, and then Samuel, who Dean charges directly toward with a gun pointed, saying, "Welcome to next time," and he's ready to murder Samuel on the spot, except Sam stops him. Dean wants everybody to leave him alone with Samuel so he can just kill him, and pretty much everybody else wants to know what Samuel and Gwen may have discovered before Dean just kills him, because, yes, they are all working the same case. They all may have information to share. So Sam takes Dean out of the room just to give the grown-ups, I guess, a chance to talk business. Sam tries to caution Dean that Samuel could know something that we don't yet. It could be valuable. Dean's like, "You don't remember what he did." You know, because Sam was soulless at the time. He literally does not have those full, colorful memories that Dean does of being betrayed by Samuel, of all the torture of monsters that he inflicted. And, you know, it's probably at least partly Samuel's fault that they're in this circumstance with Eve coming out of purgatory, because she was there to protect her children, that Samuel was the one gathering them all up to torture and kill them. So, yeah, it is kind of Samuel's fault that they're all there in the first place, even if they don't put all those pieces together yet. But Dean's like, no, he doesn't get a second chance. And Sam's like, yeah, I understand that I don't have those memories and I know it's bad. I'm not saying don't kill him. I'm just saying don't kill him yet. Meanwhile, Gwen is wondering what prompted such a strong reaction in Dean. She looks between Samuel and where Sam and Dean are standing in the next room, wondering why Dean would have threatened to kill him on sight. She doesn't know anything about throwing them to the ghouls. Samuel had been prepared to kill them. And Dean's just had enough. He walks off to blow off some steam, just get his thoughts in order. And Sam lets him, because they don't have any reason to suspect Conworm monster possession yet. It doesn't seem dangerous to let Dean stalk off down the hallway alone, even in a building where people had been going crazy and killing their friends. So maybe that was a poor choice. Sam comes back in, just in time to hear Samuel and Bobby having a pissing contest over being Sam and Dean's family. Samuel comments that Sam's looking well, and Sam's like, yeah, I got my soul back, no thanks to you, or so I hear. And Samuel takes this very seriously, like, oh, you don't remember, do you? Sam's like, I remember enough. But yeah, no, he doesn't remember most of his time with Samuel. Rufus gets to the point, actually, though, and asks what Samuel is there hunting. He tells them he's hunting Eve, the mother of all monsters. She's back from purgatory. She'd walked the earth about 10,000 years ago, but she's now come back again. Bobby asks Samuel how he knows all that, and Samuel's like, you don't know half the things that I know, kid. And I'm wondering, were you fed this information by Crowley? Like, how are you aware of all of these things? And Samuel argues back, oh, there's so much you don't know about us. And Bobby dismisses him with, well, I know you'd throw your own kin to hungry ghouls. And Gwen just looks horrified by that. She's like, well, you would do that? What? I'm your kin. Would you throw me to a ghoul? Samuel insists that Dean lied about that. And Bobby says, why don't you go ask Dean about that? So Gwen's like, yeah, that's a good idea. She goes to talk to Dean, who's been outside by himself all this time. She finds Dean just standing alone in the middle of the room and asks if it was true. And Dean's like, what, did Samuel try to kill me? Yes, he didn't even blink. Gwen tells Dean she had no idea about any of that. Dean's like, I know, but honestly, there's something I've got to tell you. And he pulls out a gun and just shoots her in the chest. What a waste of a character. She's not only their family, she had the potential to be an ally in hunting, someone interesting to keep around on the sidelines over the years, to grow into something better, like separate herself out from the Campbell family that's disintegrated under Samuel's return. Why did they have to kill her? They just needed cannon fodder here to up the stakes, to give Dean somebody to kill. But of course the gunshot, everybody else heard it and goes running. They find Gwen, try to resuscitate her and fail, but Dean is nowhere to be seen. They split up to go looking for Dean, and Sam tells Samuel that they're going to find Dean alive, or he will personally put a bullet into Samuel's head. Sam finally gets the smart idea to try and call Dean to make his phone ring so they could tell where he is in the building. I think it's funny that in Sam's phone book above Dean is Christian, who was one of the Campbells, the one who was possessed by a demon for most of the time Sam knew him, and one who is also dead now. Dean happens to be hiding near where Rufus is. Rufus turns his gun on Dean as he pops out from his hiding spot. Dean looks freaked out and paranoid, also pointing a gun. Samuel is the next one into the room, also pointing his gun at Dean. And then Bobby and Sam come running in, urging Dean to put his gun down. Dean's like, look, I'm not in the mood to calm down. I just had a 12-inch herpy crawl out of my ear. Everybody's like, what? What the hell did you have crawl out of your ear? Dean said he just woke up on the ground and a foot-long worm thing crawled out of his ear and off into a vent. And he wants to know what the hell is going on. Samuel tells Dean that he killed Gwen, and that's why he's still pointing his gun at him. But Dean is shocked and horrified by this. I did what? From Dean's experience, everybody else puts it together that he was sort of possessed by a monster, which is a totally new concept to all of them. Only Samuel insists, or the worm's still in you and we can't believe a word you're saying. Bobby tells Dean to check his ear. Dean's like, what the hell? What are you talking about? Rufus sticks his finger in Dean's ear, and it's goo positive. The same goo they found on the guy who went nuts at the cannery's ear is in Dean's ear. Bobby's reaction to this is for everybody to put their weapons in a bag that he can lock away. Everybody's like, I don't want to do that. And Bobby's like, well, we don't know who the worm might be in, which one of us might be a danger to everybody else. We should make it as hard as possible to let that thing just blow all our heads off. Bobby goes first. Everybody else complies. And they finally have to pester Samuel to comply last. But everybody looks at him suspiciously. I mean, Dean was looking at him suspiciously before, just because, you know, he'd promised to kill him anyways, regardless of if he's got a worm up in him or not. They put the weapons in a locker in the employee break room and just hang out, calling all of their contacts, trying to see what they can find out if anybody's ever heard of anything like this. Samuel gets up to leave the room and Sam tries to stop him and Samuel's like, no, no, it's just a bathroom break. And they let him go, but Sam and Dean silently agree that they are going to follow Samuel. Meanwhile, Bobby and Rufus express their frustration at their complete lack of any information from any of their contacts. Bobby's like, I think we should just go in guns blazing, forget having any sort of plan, just be prepared to kill anything. And Rufus is like, what, like Omaha? And Bobby's like, screw you for bringing up Omaha. Like this was some sort of catastrophic mistake on Bobby's part that Rufus just low-key has never forgiven Bobby for. And it's clear that there is lingering animosity between them over whatever happened in Omaha, even if we never find out the details of it. Meanwhile, Sam and Dean catch up with Samuel, and he realizes he's got to face them. Dean asks him how he sleeps at night. Samuel's like a baby. Dean's like, even though you fed us to Crowley. Samuel admits it. He's like, what am I going to do now, though? It's not like I can go back and change it. I'm not going to cry over spilled blood. Sam tries to call him out on that attitude, and Samuel calls Sam out like he'd been waiting to get judged by Sam. He's like, just because you're Dr. Jekyll now doesn't mean you get to go all high and mighty on me and my choices. I saw how you were that whole year, and you've got no high ground here. Sam challenges Samuel to tell him what he did that was so horrifying, and Dean's like, no, we're not going down that road again. I've already seen what happens when you pierce your wall back into those memories. Not on a job. He goes and stands between Sam and Samuel, and tells Samuel that the only reason he's not dead right now is because they're working a job. But the minute we kill this thing, you're next. Samuel tells them, okay then, we'll just see. And Dean notices some black goo on Samuel's ear. And he reaches into his pocket and Dean reacts, grabbing the gun from him before Samuel can kill them. But Samuel runs off. Bobby and Rufus run in because they heard the shot. Sam and Dean go chasing off after Samuel. And Rufus is like, yeah, I'm going to be needing my gun back now. And Bobby's like, yeah, you think? So they go back to retrieve all their guns. As they're collecting their guns, Rufus is like, don't feel bad. It was a good plan, except for the part where a monster would definitely not give up all of his weapons. And I think it's fair to point out that Samuel probably was not possessed by the monster when he kept his gun, and that all of them probably had additional weapons on them, other than the single guns they each turned over. I mean, we know how many weapons Dean keeps on his person. He's at least got a knife in his boot and probably, you know, half a dozen other things secreted away on his person. Sam and Dean come back in, collect some guns, and formulate a plan. They've got to stick together because that way they can keep an eye on who's possessed. They're creeping around the warehouse, and Sam yoinks Dean back from a doorway, and he's like, whoa, 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 hey, hey, hey. Everybody else freaks out, like, is Sam about to go nuts? Is he now possessed? And he points out that, no, he saved Dean from cutting a tripwire because there was a trap. They all carefully step over it, and as they're looking around the next room, the lights go out and a door closes that cuts Sam off from everybody else. The other three try to find another way around, and so does Sam, to rejoin them. But Sam stumbles across Samuel, just standing there. Sam tells him to put his gun down. Samuel comes walking toward him like, would you shoot your own family? You've got your soul back. You wouldn't do that, would you? Sam's like, yeah, don't pull the family card on me. Samuel tries to continue plugging that, you know, Mary's your mother and you're named after me, and Sam's not having it. So Samuel offers, you still want to know about that year you can't remember, don't you? I could tell you all about it. But Samuel won't stop getting closer to Sam, and even when he offers to put his gun down, he doesn't. Finally, Sam just shoots him right between the eyes. He looks like he's kind of horrified that he was actually able to do it. After the gunshot, though, Dean yells out for Sam, concerned, because, like, either Sam is injured or he's injured or killed their grandfather. And either way, that's not good. The others find Sam, and they're like, oh, thank God, it's not Sam dead. But then Bobby orders Sam to drop the gun. And Sam's like, what? And everybody else is like, you killed a guy. We don't know if the monster's in you now, so we're just gonna be careful on this one. And Sam gets it pretty quick and slowly puts the gun on the ground, assuring them it's him. Sam even complies with Rufus zip-tying his hands behind his back, just to be sure. Sam tells them the thing is still in Samuel. Bobby's like, are you sure? Sam was watching him the entire time, and nothing crawled out his ear. They can no longer find a trace of the black goo in Samuel's ear, though, when they examine his body. And they're like, well, there's only one way to find out. We got a cranial saw. Bobby apparently has one in his car, so Rufus and Bobby head out to find it, under the instructions that if anything crawls out of anybody, just step on it, which is the best possible plan. But Sam's feeling really guilty at the moment, like, did I kill him without reason? Dean assures Sam that he did the right thing. Sam agrees, though, that what he does remember about Samuel wasn't great, even though he doesn't remember most of that year, and he knows how awful he was that year, so even though we've seen a little bit of redemption for Samuel in seeing some of his reactions to truly, purely soulless Sam, Sam now has context and framework for what he does remember, and he knows there's some shady shit going on there. Plus, Samuel throwing them to a ghoul, feeding them to Crowley in the first place, all of that's pretty damn unforgivable. But, Dean's like, what, there's a but? Sam's like, what would Mom think? You know, they killed her father. Dean tells Sam that Mom would probably say, just because your blood doesn't make you family. And this is a lecture that Dean will give in a few years to Crowley, of all people, about his relationship with Rowena, in an ironic twist on this concept. But to Dean, you've got to earn the title of family. And Samuel never did for him. They might be blood relatives. He might have been Samuel's grandson, but he wasn't family to them. Which explains a lot of Dean's relationships with other people. If you've earned that label of family, it's yours forever. You might have your fallings out, you might have your issues with other people, but if you've earned that title of family, almost nothing is unforgivable. That means something very deep to Dean. It means he trusts you completely. He knows you've got his back to the best of your ability. And he feels the same way about you. And then the lights come back on. Bobby and Rufus have found the power box, turned all the power back on, and they've got their tools. They pull out the bone saw, and Bobby tells them to take a breather, like, leave the room. Dean's like, arms folded, we're good. Bobby's like, no, we're gonna crack open your grandfather's head. Get out of here. So they grudgingly go. Back in the autopsy room now, Rufus judges Bobby on the state of his electronic devices. The cranial saw's power cord is completely frayed, and Bobby's like, what, it still works? Before they start the autopsy, though, Bobby tells Rufus that he's been thinking, and Omaha really was all his fault. Bobby should have listened to Rufus. Rufus repeatedly tries to brush off this apology. You know, we've had this conversation. We're good. Rufus apparently lost someone he cared about because of Bobby's actions or choices that day, and we don't get any further clarification than that. But Rufus's joking manner comes to a dead halt, and he very seriously tells Bobby, you can apologize all day. We've had this conversation. No matter what you say, it doesn't change anything. And Rufus tells Bobby that he will never forgive him for what happened. So change the subject. It feels like a condemnation. Bobby knows he screwed up and has known he's screwed up for a long time, but Rufus has never truly let it go, despite the fact that we've seen them work companionably with one another, that they have this grudging friendship and have for a long time. That doesn't change anything. They can still work together. They can still even be sort of friendly with one another, but that is always festering under the surface and always has been. So Rufus begins the autopsy, cutting into the top of Samuel's head, gets down into his brain, and Samuel just, his eyes pop open, he sits up and starts fighting with them. He is clearly not dead. He is still possessed by the monster, despite having a bullet in his brain. Monster-possessed Samuel breaks off the leg of a table and shoves it through the handles of the door so Sam and Dean, who come running back at the sounds of a skirmish, cannot get in, and he's got full access to do whatever he wants to Rufus and Bobby as Sam and Dean watch through the windows on the door. Dean finally cuts Sam's hands free to help him. They both start kicking at the door, trying to break the beam holding it shut, when Bobby flings Samuel back into the plug where Bobby's frayed wire contraption is plugged in, and it electrocutes him. At which point, the con worm crawls out Samuel's ear and goes skittering off across the floor to points unknown. Sam and Dean finally get the door kicked in time to help Rufus and Bobby as they rouse themselves off the floor. Bobby and Rufus need Sam and Dean to describe the events because they were, like, unconscious on the ground when it happened. And Bobby points out, well, at least we know what annoys the monster. Electricity. You shock it, it flees. Unfortunately, there's no evidence of where it went. Either it bailed on the place entirely, or it's in one of you, Bobby or Rufus. Rufus says, well, it could be in one of you two, Sam or Dean. And they're like, oh no, well, we were awake the whole time. We were watching this happen from outside in the hall. And Rufus is like, did you have eyes on each other? Did you confirm that? So Sam suggests they all do the ear goo check, and everybody comes up goo negative. But then again, Samuel didn't have goo in his ear when they began the autopsy. That's the whole reason they were cutting open his skull to begin with, to check and make sure the worm was still in there. Because there was no goo in his ear. So let's confirm that we're all goo negative. There's one way to prove it. Sam jury rigs the frayed wire to shock them on purpose. First he runs a test on a metal folding chair. It sparks like crazy and everybody else flinches like, oh boy, that's gonna hurt. And they do a second check on Samuel to prove it's gone. His body just twitches, but he's still dead. Not possessed anymore. Sam holds the wire and asks, okay, who goes first? And Dean shrugs off his coat and exposes his forearm and is like, yeah, come on, before I change my... And before he can even finish his sentence, Sam's shocking him. And it clearly hurts a lot. His fist clenches, his muscles all tense out, and Dean bows his head like, oh god, this is awful. But he's also not got monsters crawling out his ears. He's good. Dean then reaches out to grab the wire from Sam to do Sam, but Sam's already shocking himself. And again, clearly it hurts. No monster. Dean does take the wire then and approaches Rufus. He's like, no, no, you can't back out. Rufus is like, no, no, but I got a damn pacemaker. And he and Bobby start chatting like it's conversation time. Oh, since when do you have a pacemaker?
Since Bush Jr. term one. I'm down three toes too, by the way.
And they're just yammering at each other over all of this. And Dean's like, well, you just better hope it's a good pacemaker. Because you've got to get shocked too. Rufus agrees, sticks out his arm, and yeah, he's good too. Rufus then grabs the wire from Dean, like he wants to do Bobby himself. Bobby's like, okay, I guess it's my turn, and just starts slowly backing away. And everybody else gets more and more suspicious that the thing is 100% in Bobby. But because Bobby is not acting like himself, Rufus calls him out. He's like, Bobby, my ass. And he goes after him with the electric wire. And Bobby just stabs Rufus in the chest. Sam and Dean are both on guard now. And they try and surround Bobby. But there's only two of them left. I mean, we're getting down to and then there are were none. You know what I mean? But it's very obvious now that Bobby is possessed. He unplugs that wire like first priority so they can't short him out again. Sam warns him that there are two of us and one of you. He charges at Sam. Sam grabs his arms and gets him turned around, and Dean knocks his lights out. And he wakes up tied to a chair. Only it is very clearly not Bobby. Dean shocks him on the back of the neck, and some black ooze seeps out of Bobby's nose, but the worm is still in him. The worm tells them he's comfy inside Bobby. He's like, you really love this guy, don't you? If you want to kill me, you're going to have to take him with me. He's not going to let them save Bobby. And then it tells them, haven't you lost enough battles today? Dean tells it that they'll do what they have to do. And isn't that the worst phrase in Supernatural? That if they felt compelled to, they would even kill Bobby to stop this thing? I mean, not like he would or would be happy about it, but they will do what they have to do, and it's better than letting Bobby spend the rest of his life possessed by this horrible thing. But Dean wants answers from this thing. And the monster's like, I've been waiting for you to ask me questions. I've got nothing to hide. I'm supposed to give you information. Sam asks what it is, and it tells Sam that there's no name for it yet. That Eve cooked them up just for this purpose. So I guess this is the first and last of its kind. Dean's not fond of that answer, though. So he takes it out on the monster, and by proxy, Bobby as well. Dean wants to know who Eve is. The mother of all monsters. And what this monster creature seems to be promising them is very much what will happen in season 7. Or what the Leviathan intend to do to humanity as well. When we're done, you'll be living in pens and we'll serve you up for dinner. You'll be like our cattle. The monsters are going to take over. And that's exactly what the Leviathan try and do. Except they don't care about any of Eve's children. They only care about themselves. Sam asks how messing with a couple of truckers is supposed to help with these goals. The monster tells them, we led you here. This was a trap for you. She's pissed at what they've been doing to her children, and it's just going to be pain from here on in. And it's like, why are Sam and Dean specifically getting singled out and targeted for all these terrible things that other people did in the background? And doesn't this honestly sound like every one of Chuck's plans for them ever? Monsters flood the world. Like, isn't this his vision of season 12 with the British men of letters coming in to fight the awful things and exterminate monsters? It's just like a big back and forth, constant struggle and battle. Which side will win, good or evil?
human or monsters. And the whole vision that Chuck ends up showing Sam will happen if he lets things play out the way that they had started already, way down the line in season 15. That, you know, even they will eventually succumb and turn into monsters and be killed by their loved ones, not before taking out a bunch of their loved ones as well. That it's just going to be this horror descent into chaos, anarchy, blood, and death. Because that's what Chuck wants to happen. That's Chuck's favorite story to tell. He doesn't want to see them fight their way free of any of that. He just wants to keep flinging that story over them until one of them rolls over and dies. And that is one thing I honestly love about Dab Era, is that it's a direct critique in the word of God in story of season 6, season 7, honestly, all of it, the apocalypse, all of it. It's a critique of that. And I really, really, really enjoy that. It's so freaking satisfying because it does suck. Especially if you're Sam and Dean. Dean hates this story, though. So he shocks the monster again, to the point where Sam is concerned that he's hurting Bobby. Because Dean's just laying into him. The monster gloats at them with more goo streaming down his chin. You can't kill me, not without taking him with me. And Dean replies, well, we'll just have to do what Bobby would want us to do then. Sam grabs a roll of duct tape, wraps it around Bobby's face, ears, mouth, nose, to lock that monster inside of Bobby. Because Bobby would not want to go on. He would gladly sacrifice himself to take this thing down. And then Dean just shocks him and shocks him and shocks him until the thing is fried. They try to revive Bobby. They peel the tape back. The worm thing falls out of his ear and twitches and is dead. But Bobby's not breathing. We flash forward to a cemetery where Sam and Dean are standing over a grave, and at first, of course, you think it's got to be Bobby. But then Bobby walks up as well, and we realize it's Rufus's grave in a Jewish cemetery. No Hunter's funeral for Rufus. Dean's like, I never realized Rufus was religious, and Bobby's like, yeah, he didn't keep kosher, but he always pulled the I can't work on the Sabbath card whenever we had to bury a body and he didn't want to dig a hole. And we'll see that again in the future in flashback, like it was some running gag of their friendship. And we get to see a little bit of Rufus through Bobby's eyes and his long friendship with Rufus. When he first met Rufus, he was just a mechanic whose wife had been possessed by a demon. He didn't know anything about hunting. Rufus was the one who exorcised the demon from Bobby's wife. She was dead by then, but Bobby was afraid he was going to go to prison for killing her, but Rufus helped him clean it all up and introduced Bobby to what's really out there. And they rode together for years after that, just like Sam and Dean do. Sam asked what happened, why they stopped riding together. Bobby expresses it was Omaha, it was my fault, and he never let it go. And Dean just cuts him off before he can say anything else, and he's like, he should have let it go. Bobby challenges him on that. You don't know what I did, Dean. Dean's just like, doesn't matter what you did. Dean points out that at the end of the day, the two of them were family. They did whatever they could for each other. And we saw that play out through this entire episode, the difference between what is family and what isn't. It's not the blood relative. They're not having this conversation over the Campbell family tombs. They're having this at Rufus's grave. He was family, even though they're not blood related at all. Bobby's their family, even though he's just some guy. But he's not some guy through his actions and his choices and his words and his deeds. And yeah, they all have made mistakes, but they always forgive each other and they will continue to fight for one another. And they know that they have their each other's backs.
Dean goes on to say that life is short, and it's even shorter for them because they're hunters. Something's going to get them eventually. And when it does, I want you all to know that the slate is clean, wiped clean, no grudges, don't have any regrets. Dean says blanket apology for all the crap that everybody's done. And Sam looks over at him like feeling the guilt of his soulless year and knowing and having that just recently refreshed in his mind by Samuel. And he's like, yeah, but some of us pulled a lot of crap. And Dean looks at Sam in all seriousness and is like, yeah, clean slate. Like, I understand your guilt here. There's no need for it. I forgive you for all of that. We're good. And Sam accepts that. Bobby pulls out a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue and pours some out on Rufus's grave. That's his favorite drink. Yeah, you're paying probably at least $200 for that bottle. So I think that in itself is a statement as to Bobby's feelings of guilt for Rufus. His hand is the one that did it, even if he doesn't remember because monster possession. And his lifetime of guilt over what happened in Omaha, the mysterious event that killed somebody that Rufus cared for. And the recent confirmation that Rufus will never forgive him for that. Bobby's doing what he can. Sam and Dean walk away, leaving Bobby at the grave to hold up the bottle and then take a sip of it himself and just stand there alone at Rufus's grave. And that's how the episode ends. So, unlike the Agatha Christie play, there are survivors here. They're clearly bedraggled and terrified of what is coming for them in the future, the monsters that are going to relentlessly hunt them, the complete uncertainty about what they are facing, bigger picture here. Crowley and his monster plan have clearly stirred all of this up. For what bigger purpose, we know not yet. To find a way into purgatory. Why? No ideas yet. I mean, we know, bigger picture. We've seen all of season 6. They want the power of all those souls. So this really is a cosmic level war that they don't even know they're fighting yet. And doesn't that just suck? And don't these cosmic level wars just get bigger and worse? And even once they know the scope of what they're fighting, it doesn't get any better. But they do grow as people. And as Dean has proven in this episode, with his attitudes towards family clearly defined, the people who stick with you through thick and thin, even when you wrong each other, you forgive each other, and you stand by each other, those are family. That's what's important to him. It's that loyalty. Even when it's broken or tested, it always gets a pass eventually from him. He can let it go and move on, and he doesn't bear that grudge long term like Rufus had. And Sam and Bobby know that they are what is important to Dean. They are his family, and they are each other's family, and they all feel kind of the same way, that even with whatever Sam had done to them, it's forgiven. Even what he did to Bobby when he was soulless, trying to kill him to prevent his soul from being returned. Even Bobby has seemed to have moved past that now and trusts Sam again. So nothing is unforgivable amongst this family. And that's what they're fighting for. That's what makes it worth it to keep fighting. In a weird, twisted version of that, that's what Eve's message was in this one. What she would be willing to do for her children. God has abandoned them. Left them to this horror of the apocalypse that failed, and nobody even noticed, and God himself didn't even notice, apparently. Didn't come back to save his children from that. And we know he didn't, because he wanted it all to happen. It was a weird test to him. But even Eve has some sort of familial loyalty to her children, and cares about her children. And doesn't like that they're being used like this now. And that's why she's back. So, in a weird, twisted version of how Dean feels about his family, we're seeing a bad guy with this feeling. And we know that the angels see each other as family in the bigger picture of season 6. But they're infighting against each other, and they're bearing each other grudges. And they believe one is right and the other is wrong, and who believes which has divided their loyalties amongst different factions in heaven. And we will find that out soon enough about Raphael and his intentions and plans, and what Cass has been fighting for with the little group of rogue angels that have joined his cause. But Cass just wants everybody to kind of adopt Dean's attitude toward family. We're all family. Why are we fighting like this? They don't have each other's backs. Is that really what family does? And Cass is willing to sacrifice everything for these people, or these angels, who I call people because they're people shaped. I don't know. Point is, Cass is willing to sacrifice everything for them. He's trying desperately to apply these very human concepts of caring about people and family to his own angel family, and none of them really care or want to hear it. They've got their military corporate hierarchy of responsibility, duty, obedience that Cass doesn't really fit into. So it kind of makes his sacrifice in all of this even worse to me. It's like even sadder and more pathetic, especially that he keeps continuing to return to heaven, feeling some burden of guilt towards it for everything that's happened. And yet it never makes any headway in heaven with the other angels. Sure, he might convince a few here and there that he's on the right path, but they never stick around when their loyalty to him is challenged, or they never truly can find forgiveness for him. They bear a grudge still. So I just think it's an interesting statement on what it means to be human in this show. The core essence of humanity, having each other's backs, caring for one another, doing your best and looking out for each other, being there for each other on a very basic level, and trying to do the right thing, even though you all know that you've all failed at doing the right thing repeatedly, because that's just life. So I think that's a really good message, even though this episode overall is kind of pointless. We've lost Samuel again, but at least, you know, he can't be used against them again. And it's just sort of a disappointing end to what could have been a really interesting character arc. We've lost Gwen. And again, she was very poorly developed before they just decided to kill her off. And it's like they were starting to try and give her a little bit of a meaty personality who might have been somebody they could have worked with into the future, but now they just needed somebody to throw onto the floor, like a low-stakes person that the audience isn't invested in yet, to kick off the killings. And Rufus. Why kill Rufus? Like, I understand, but, you know, did it have to be a death? Could it not have just been a serious wound but not fatal? And they could have been in the hospital and, like, sitting in the hospital parking lot having this conversation or something like that. It did not have to be his death. They didn't have to kill off three interesting characters for this story. It just feels wasteful to me. But so much of season 6 does, doesn't it? And season 7. Whatever. Every time the universe of this show starts to grow just a little bit, the writers panic and they have to clamp it all back down. I mean, I'm not really sad about Samuel, but I'm very sad about Rufus, and I'm moderately sad about Gwen. So anyway, season 6, moving on. I'm not going to belabor this one, because from here on out, at least the episodes start to get interesting. I mean, I don't think there's just a complete dud for the rest of the season. Starting with next week's episode, season 6, episode 17, My Heart Will Go On. Because I got a lot to say about that one. Even though it's a Snimello, still interesting. We'll talk about it next week, though. And in the meantime, try not to think about Celine Dion. I mean, unless you like that sort of thing. Like Sam. Anyway. Until then, you can find me on Tumblr at Mittens Morgul or at SPN George. You can find me on Discord at MittensMorgul. You can find me on Blue Sky at mittensmorgul.bluesky.social. Or you can email me at mittensmorgul@gmail.com. And I look forward to talking to everybody again real soon. Of all the Agatha Christie stories, this one isn't even close to my favorite one. I mean, it's a very well-known one. But, you know, it's not one of the typical somebody commits a crime, one of her trusty detectives comes in to solve it, everybody is satisfied with the conclusion kind of stories. It's literally this, except, you know, everybody's dead at the end, including the person who set it all up. So, it's just kind of a depressing tale. So, I guess, you know, you should go into this episode expecting a lot of people to die, but at least Sam, Dean, and Bobby walked away, mostly intact, so anyway, have a good one, everyone.